Do you want to be transported back to being on the beach during your favorite vacation? I certainly do. Osea's Undaria Algae Body Oil smells like summer, bottled with all-natural, uplifting notes of mango, mandarin, grapefruit, lime, and cypress. And it's not just about that elevated scent. This body oil is clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity and deeply moisturize, leaving skin silky and soft. I've said it before, but I love this product. It feels like I am going to a spa every night, and it delivers that coveted post-vacation glow like you just returned from a tropical getaway. Right now, you can get 10% off your first order with our code DATEABLE at OseaMalibu.com. Get healthy, glowing skin for summer with clean vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with code DATEABLE at OseaMalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to OseaMalibu.com and use the code DATEABLE for 10% off.
Hello, everyone. We are back for season 6. Thank you guys for an incredible 2 years. Julie and I are fully committed to this for the long haul. Yep, it's official. We've DTR'd, and we hope you'll be along for the ride, too. And keep spreading the word. We love building out the Dateable family, and it's such a great treat to run into you guys at events, on the street, or even in my dance class, just absolutely crushing it on the dance floor. We're now at almost 1 million listens, thanks to you guys. In the off-season, we started doing some Facebook Lives with past guests, which included Bottle Ned. Remember him? The guy who believes the secret to dating in San Francisco is to go out of San Francisco to date. And also Taylor, who brought us some very exciting techniques for approaching people in real life. She also revealed that her real name is Melissa. So we'll keep doing these Facebook Lives throughout the season. Just follow us on Facebook and Instagram so you know when we're going live. For this season, we'll be rolling out something brand new. You ready? We'll be offering you a platform to connect with vetted dating experts to bring you profile reviews, coaching, and mock dates. We will only bring you people we trust so you can trust them to up your dating game. Look for that feature on our website at datablepodcast.com. Also for season 6, we'll be going out of San Francisco. We've done this in the past. We've interviewed guests from other cities, but this season in particular, we've had quite a number of guests who live outside of San Francisco and date outside the city. So we're not just going national, we're going international. And lastly, Julie and I checked out a really great show called Fuck Tinder, A Love Story. It's a one-man show that starts out with some hilarious true dating stories, but then rolls up into a very touching love story with a twist. The show is touring the country with some new dates added to San Francisco. So go to the website f-tinder.com for all the details. It's definitely worth checking out. Okay, season 6, here we go.
The Dateable podcast features real stories from real people of how they make modern dating work, or not. I'm your host, Yue, former dating coach turned dating insider, if you will. On each episode, you'll hear commentary from my producer, Julie Kraftchick, and other surprise co-hosts.
This episode is brought to you by Hired Club, where friends help friends find jobs. You guys, we all know how challenging it is to find a new job, but Hired Club makes it easy. You can post a job or refer a friend for one. You can also get career coaching with professional career counselors to improve your resume, increase your salary, or practice interviewing and more. Join today at HiredClub.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Dateable, a show all about modern dating. Today we don't have our guest in the studio, but we do have him on Skype with us. Isn't it great technology just brings us closer no matter where we are? We have Brian Howie on the line. How are you, Brian?
Hi, how are you?
We're good. So just a little intro about Brian. He's in his 40s. He's originally from New York and lives in LA currently. He is dating someone but have not defined the relationship. We're going to get to that in a sec. But what makes Brian really interesting is, first of all, you and I have a mutual friend, Julie Alexandria.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I called her earlier this morning to get some dirt about you.
Her relationship status has recently changed for the better.
Oh, yeah. She recently got engaged. She's like the happiest can be. But Brian is the host and creator of the Great Love Debate World Tour and also an associated top-rated podcast. He has been featured on Fox, ABC, CNN, Entertainment Weekly, The New Yorker, and Esquire magazine. Time magazine named him America's number one dating enthusiast. Dating enthusiast.
I like that.
And the Miami Herald calls him dating's leading influencer. And you can hear more about the Great Love Debate because you guys have been on tour. You've gone to over 79 cities nationwide. That's crazy.
We're up to 81. Yeah,
81. We did our three. Okay. Good for you. I actually went to one in New York a while back.
Oh, wow. We did our 300th show last week in Charlotte. 300 shows we've done.
Wow. Can you tell us a little more about what the Great Love Debate is for anyone that's listening that may not know?
Well, we've traveled around literally the world and in theaters and comedy clubs and other places. And we bring together a couple hundred, usually single, but not always, men and women. And over the course of 90 minutes in a fun, feisty forum, we try and break down the walls and the disconnect between the men and the women and find out why all of these seemingly reasonable people are either single or single again, or some of those who aren't single probably should be single. every show is different. Every city is different. Every crowd's different. So it goes in all sorts of directions.
Got it. So you've been to 81 cities nationwide, 300 shows. Yep. Have you gone international?
Yeah. Canada. We were just in Asia. We are going to all sorts of places because it's really the only thing that you go anywhere in the world that people can have an opinion on or share an anecdote on or voice what they feel about love, dating, relationships. It's something for everybody.
Being in all these different cities, you know, internationally, what are some of the recurring themes that come up from city to city?
That the women want the men to try harder and the men want the women to make it easier. That's literally the crux of the disconnect everywhere. This sort of blurring of the gender roles, which, you know, we have changed societally, but we have not changed physiologically. And it's really caused a problem. I mean, over the last 20 years, the women have gotten a little harder and the men have gotten a little softer. And so the reaction to that is everybody hides behind their technology. But a lot of people blame the technology. The technology is just the reaction. The action is things have gotten a little confused. And, you know, these shows tend to break down those walls because you're forcing men and women to get in a room and have an open dialogue about it. It really helps. I mean, we've had, that we know of, over 40 couples get engaged or eventually married from meeting at one of our shows.
Oh, wow. Hash it out. And then
just a lot. And really, it's just the act of having an open communication and increase everybody's confidence. And most importantly, let everybody know that they're not the only one who's frustrated or has some issues or some pain or some regrets, and mostly find the hope in everybody. That's sort of what we're doing. We're selling hope here.
You are selling hope. But at the same time, you know, when you talk about the Great Love Debate, the one I went to in New York, it seemed like it was just a bunch of women bitching. So how do you try to steer the conversation away from that negativity of bitching and complaining to a place of let's talk about things in a rational adult manner?
Well, I've done 300 of them. And to be honest with you, when we started, I was sort of amused by making it as close to Jerry Springer show as possible. And I realized that the next day or a couple days later, people would wake up and think, you know, I don't feel better that I went to that. I really, you know, feel that it's a really scary place. So, you know, we start and sort of lay out, here are the problems in this city and here are the problems in every city. And we sort of, over the course of 90 minutes or so, let everybody know why they're really not a problem if you do X, Y, and Z, and if you do A, B, and C. And show that we're not as far apart as we think that we are if we can just do a handful of things that mostly come down to confidence and communication. And so, you know, the mood changes drastically over the course of an hour and a half or so.
I'm super interested in these sort of gender disconnects that, you know, you have conversations about. I want to park that for later because first I want to talk about the different cities. Here in San Francisco, we always hear people complaining about their own city. I can't date in San Francisco because of this issue and this issue and this issue. You're telling us that there are sort of these underlying themes that are consistent across all cities, which is women want men to try harder and men want women to make it easier for them. Are there any differences between these major cities?
Yeah. San Francisco, for those of you in San Francisco who have trouble dating, San Francisco is absolutely brutal. It is, you know, it didn't make our worst city in America for 2017, but it finished second.
Wow, what's the worst city?
The worst is Denver.
Oh,
really?
And, okay,
that's good to know because we have a lot of San Franciscans who want to move to Denver thinking it's going to be better.
Well, no, I mean, Denver, it sort of just comes out of that. Denver, the men are too soft, and San Francisco, the women are too hard. I mean, honestly, the men in San Francisco always say, the women here think they're too good for us, and the women in San Francisco say, we are absolutely too good for you.
Oh, my God, that's so true.
And that's really a challenge. And, you know, we've done probably 7 shows in San Francisco, and it's one of the toughest places for us to do the show because... You know, the women kind of have convinced themselves that the guys aren't up to snuff.
But that's been your theory.
They want to be validated in their misery.
You always had this theory for years that there's just a big mismatch of men and women in San Francisco.
There really is because, you know, I was in New York for 7 years and then I moved to L.A. and now I'm in San Francisco. And when I moved to San Francisco, everyone was like, it's a gold mine for you. The numbers are in your favor. You're just going to find someone right away. And I come here and it's just, again, a lot of single people complaining. And yes, the numbers are in our favor in some ways, but it's a huge mismatch. The people who are single.
I don't think the numbers are in your favor. I mean, I think that it's, you know, a lot of the women are like, yeah, there's tons of single guys, but they're not the guys I want.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Probably true. It's a little bit worse down in Silicon Valley. It's even worse.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, they're not, you know, the women in San Francisco are not a real good match for the men in San Francisco. And it's sort of like if I put the women in San Francisco in New York, it's probably fine.
So let's go to New York. What is the issue in New York?
The issue in New York is that people are so, I mean, you're surrounded by people every day and people, it's really the loneliest place. And I'm from New York, so I can sort of say this. Mm-hmm. People are really, it's not a stop and schmooze and socialize. People go from point A to point B and then they only talk to the people at point A or point B. And there's not a real sense of community in New York City. It's also tough because you're never going to see the same person twice or three times or four times like you would in a smaller city where you would go to the same places or you'd go to the same happy hour and you would sort of build up some momentum over time. New York, if you don't make your move in a moment, that person's gone. And that makes it a real challenge.
New York second.
That's really good.
And like New Yorkers are the most unapproachable bunch in the country.
But people say that New York men specifically are like more aggressive and like all of that. What are your thoughts on that?
I think they are, but they're being aggressive with women who don't really care about that. Or, I mean, they have to. So if you took a man I tell the men in New York, move to Denver. The women will be open to your playful aggression and you'll be fine. Like there's certain cities that are just a little bit, you know, I always make the joke that the Statue of Liberty stands there with that resting bitch face sort of looking over the whole city.
It has RBF. That's so true. So,
and that sort of sets a bad tone for New York.
Interesting.
And, you know, and the other problem in New York City and like in a lot of cities, the women there watched Sex in the City for a decade. Okay? Mm-hmm. Who did you want her to end up with?
Big.
The biggest douchebag in the world.
Guys notice that and they watch that. So they act like Big, but they don't look like Chris Noth. So it's a problem.
Or have his status by any means.
Charisma.
I have to agree. I mean, the 7 years I was in New York, I dated the most ever in my life, but I was definitely the loneliest. And there were some low points in those 7 years that ultimately resulted in me moving out of New York. So I would definitely agree with that sentiment. What about LA? What are the issues there?
The weather. Honestly, it really is the weather.
Huh.
The weather so nice every single day that you can, you know, walk your dog, go to the beach, drink your wine, and have a reasonably satisfying experience without ever going on a date. So your incentive is not really there. The quality of life is pleasant alone. And so people don't have a real incentive to date, or they look for reasons like, I don't want to sit in traffic. I don't want to go over there. I don't want to do that. It's too hard. You know, a lot of people there's less actual dates going on in Los Angeles than just about
it's
anywhere
true.
You're going to find.
Location is a huge deal in LA. If you're not within a mile of me, I'm not driving in that traffic to come to you.
It's like 2 hours. But
you'll drive 20 miles to get a cheap desk at IKEA, you know?
So their priorities are a little fucked.
Exactly. People just because you're quality of day-to-day life is very pleasant, generally. Yeah. You don't have any reason to shake that up by sitting across from somebody you don't know for an hour. You know,
so that is so interesting.
And all of the warm weather, nice weather places are like that. Phoenix is like that. San Diego's like that. Where the opposite, if you go to, you know, Minneapolis, you better find somebody to stay warm with in the wintertime. And it's mostly inside, and so that does incentivize people to date.
You know, this is that's such a fascinating point, because when I was in New York and I'm thinking about all of my friends who eventually define the relationship with their partners, it was all a result of some sort of weather condition. It was like there was a blizzard warning and he came over and we shacked up for 3 days we decided that we were meant for each other. Like, those are the moments that you really bond, because you really can't be outside.
It even adds to chivalrous behavior. Like, if it's raining under my umbrella. LA, you know, you're fine. So I like that.
That's hilarious. What about looks in LA? Because I feel like that, I've never lived in LA, so I don't know personally, but that's like the perception that's out there, is that people are just very superficial, or like looking to like date really young for men and whatnot.
I think that's a little bit of a misnomer. Okay. I think they're looking to date young, some of the men, because they can. You know, it's more of an insecurity thing, but you know, the people aren't necessarily, you know, better looking here than anywhere else. It's just, you know, people don't need to really get into that emotional muck that traditional dating will happen. So when you look at people on a date in Los Angeles, they're both looking at the door. Both looking at everybody else.
Well, it's interesting because, like, there is that stereotype. That's probably, like, a 1%, right? Like, that is what you think of. But like,
I mean, the high-end, you know, model on 63rd and 5th in New York, you know, she's better than anybody, but that's not the norm.
Exactly.
You know? There's good-looking people in every city. There's a lot of people here who are like, I'm going to be the opposite of that because I don't care about this stuff. And so there's a lot of people who really don't look so good out of choice.
Interesting.
And, you know, but it is outdoors a lot and you are wearing less clothing a lot. I think Lululemon has hurt dating, because girls can look cute. They can look cute at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So they have no excuse to go on a date and get all dressed up. They can get the attention and compliments anyway.
Well, here people, men bitch that women just wear yoga pants all the time.
It's like our uniform here.
The yoga other Lululemon.
Good. Gray sweats like 20 years ago, you know?
Exactly. Would you rather have me wear really tight Lululemon leggings or in sweats? One or the other. But then, Brian, where is the best city to date in the U.S.?
We named Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee.
Interesting.
Why? I would think they'd be all married with like 6 kids by now.
Milwaukee's like Chicago without the bad parts, you know? And the good thing about most of those Midwestern cities is that the men and the women socialize together all the time. Like, they'll start out, they'll play sports together and they'll watch games and they'll hang out. You see groups of men and women together all the time in Chicago and Milwaukee and Cleveland and those places. In the South, or even Denver or Seattle, you'll see the men on one side of the room and the women on another side of the room until somebody's drunk enough to cross at like 11:30.
That is SF too.
You know, we just did a show in Charlotte the other day, and I said on TV, the only, like, there's no socializing between the men and the women that's not at happy hour or at church here. And they sort of like, yeah, that's true. So Monday through Thursday, the men and the women aren't hanging out the way they are hanging out in Milwaukee. Milwaukee, you can bond over beer and cheese curds like nothing else, I'm telling you.
You know what, you bring something up that I think about all the time when I first moved to San Francisco. There's a level of competitiveness between men and women here because you are literally competing for some of these tech jobs. So there's that competitiveness of not like – there's no camaraderie between the two genders. But I think what you're getting at is what I'm seeing too is in these Midwestern cities where things are a little simpler, there isn't that competitiveness.
Well, yeah. The simpler times, it was – you know, the guy asked out the girl and he picked her up and he took her out and he paid for it. And, you know, some of these other cities, I get they've evolved and it's a wonderful thing in a certain way. But I bring up this anecdote a lot that we did a show in San Francisco and a guy stood up and he said, I don't hold the door for women anymore because they stop saying thank you. And a woman stood up and said, if you need us to say thank you, don't do it. And they're both right and they're both wrong. Does that make sense?
They're
both 100% right and they're both 100% wrong. And that's San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. So I think it's really fascinating that in none of this analysis you pointed to tech. Because people always will blame apps.
I know. Tech is the reaction to the change. If we took everybody's phones away tomorrow, they're still not talking to each other. Mm-hmm. People hide behind the tech because they're confused and they're scared. The men are afraid of being rejected and the women are afraid of being hurt. And so let's have this barrier. But it's not the tech. The tech is the Band-Aid that is sort of holding together the confusion of, you know, people like, I don't know how old you guys are, but anybody who's over 35, we used to have to pick you up to go on a date.
Oh, yeah.
Now it seems insane, you know, which it shouldn't, but that's the way it is. And so people are confused because the switch got flipped. So until people sort of have either their confidence or their, you know, understanding what they're dealing with, everybody's going to hide behind technology.
So before we get into that, because I know this is a much deeper discussion, before we get into that, I just want to play Big Brother for a sec. Let's just match up the different single people in each city. You're saying San Francisco women would do really well in New York. Where should then the New York women go?
The New York women, they should go to Texas.
Oh.
They should go to Dallas.
Oh, go south.
Why is that?
Because they would find a certain charm in a Southern man that the Southern women know is bullshit.
It's true.
I love it.
They would almost get it like when a New York woman goes to Tuscany and they sort of like that Italian man behavior. They would like that down in Dallas. So basically, we have to rotate the country 90 degrees.
Okay, so where do the Dallas women go? Or the Texas?
The Texas women should go to
San Francisco. Chicago.
No, they should go to Chicago. No, the San Francisco men are not really going to get it done too many places.
Oh, shit.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, dang. You hear that?
I like that. I think the men can stop blaming the ratio themselves.
Again, you know, as, no matter where we go, it's not that you haven't met the right person. It's that you haven't been the right person. And so a lot of that means that you have to sort of analyze. It's never really the city and it's never really the opposite sex. And it's never really, you know, we've done gay shows and we've done Asian shows and married shows and black shows and Jewish. We've done every possible denomination, every breakdown. And if you printed out the transcripts to all of them, you would not be able to tell in the first 5 minutes which group we're dealing with here.
Interesting.
Because still comes down to people have lost their ability, their confidence to communicate face to face. We had a woman come to our show in Chicago and she shared an Uber pool with a guy. And you know what Uber pool is? And Charlotte the other night, they don't know it. They don't have it yet. She shared an Uber pool with a guy. She kind of liked him and she couldn't wait to get out of the car to find him online to say hello. That's where we are now. Instead of just turning her head right, she needed to get to the safety of the technology. And
we see that here, too. But guys could be at a bar, sees a girl, and then starts swiping on Tinder, hoping to find her on their app.
But everyone here thinks that's unique to San Francisco. Right. I find fascinating.
It's everywhere because we're at the point now where we need some sort of virtual approval to say hello. And that's something that's even gotten worse, obviously, in the last 90 days. Like, it used to be, if I came up to you, I might get rejected. Now it's, I might be a harasser. And so, you know, the men are bailing, guys, ladies. They're like 10% of the men who are like, I don't need the crap.
Okay, and let's talk about that then. Yes. I feel like you're pretty passionate about this. The whole Me Too movement, all of that, today's climate. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, I mean, what I've noticed since it happened was there was already a big pool of men that were already very, very close to just saying, you know what, we're 2 years away from virtual porn. I am out. And get a reasonably satisfying experience with that. Then on the flip side, about half the women are like, you know what, I'm willing to nuke it at all costs because, you know, I've been itching for this fight for 20 years and I don't care what happens and I want, and that's fine. And they have every right to do that too. And then the other half of the women are like, shut up. You're going to scare off the rest of the men and we're going to have no shot. So it's like a three-way battle going on now. Mm. And a lot of the men, you know, you used to be able to flirt at work.
Yep.
You know, that's kind of the thing. Now it's you can't even flirt after work. And so the men are like, what would you like us to do, ladies? And I've asked the women this, you know, especially over the last 3 months, what would you like us to do? And because the women don't really have an answer on that, because the difference between, you know, compliment and creepy is who's giving it. And the man has no idea how you're going to interpret whatever he's thinking or saying. So I don't know how, I mean, women have no answer to that.
It's confusing. I totally agree. It's confusing. Even for our podcast, sometimes I don't know if I'm offending anybody, if I'm saying something that's, you know, stepping out of boundaries. I don't know anymore. It's confusing. And I agree. I think it's all on an individual basis. As for me, I need a man to take control. I need a man to also be assertive, but then also know when I am saying no, which is when I say no.
Yeah. Well, it's hard. Okay.
You're right. But sometimes, you know, and everybody has a right to their story, but some of the most publicized stories recently, the Russell Simmons story, mm-hmm. The Aziz Ansari story, nobody said no. Right. There was no. There was thought of no. There was 20 years later, I felt no. And so
it's called regret.
Yeah.
Right. So men are like, I don't need the crap. I'm not a mind reader. I'm not going to. And so, again, you know, this was first brought up on our show last year by Dr. Drew. He's done our show. And he said that as soon as, you know, somebody's going to be able to put on a helmet, and somebody who looks just like Blake Lively is going to tell him he's awesome and give him a reasonably satisfying experience, and that's half of Silicon Valley right now, mm-hmm. those guys are never going to ask out a girl, ever. And you could say, well, it's not as good. Well, they don't know that it's not as good, and it's enough. And so if we don't sort this out in like the next 18 months, like it's really a huge problem.
Yeah.
How can we sort this out? What is the solution here?
I think it's challenging because, like, there is obviously there's the people that are at the far end of the spectrum that we've, like, talked about. And I get why, like, the Me Too movement has come full force and definitely understandable. But I hear what you're saying, Brian. I totally agree with it. It's like for the 80% of men that are not like that way, now it's just terrifying. And like, I actually am from Boston, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on Boston too.
But, oh yeah.
I think one of the things I found was
I went to Holy Cross, so I know.
Okay, there we go.
Worcester, so I know Boston
but
pretty well.
All of my friends, and I remember when I worked there, so many people got married to people they worked with. Like, it was a huge way to meet people. Like, that's probably like the most common way I felt like people I knew met.
Waking time, these are the people. I mean, you know, that's who you're going to be in contact with. I don't know if you suddenly take that off the table, right. Which I think we do have to take that off the table, then we better figure out a way to fill up the other sort of 50 hours of waking time a week with interaction.
Totally.
But the problem with that is there's so much technology that can occupy your time. And, you know, the guys love the video games because they feel they can win. They feel they can succeed at a video game. Mm. And so they're entertained and they're stimulated and they get an adrenaline rush that we used to have to go out to a bar to get, you know? And I think it's not the blame, but it is the onus, the responsibility is the women need to get on the same page. And they are not now. And so the men are like, A, they don't feel they have a voice in the conversation, and B, they feel like that they're scared to say or make the wrong move or say the wrong thing. So until the women sort of not only get on the same page as far as strategically, how do we deal with this? But also, on some level, have to acknowledge their role in this. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women get mad at me, but I live in Los Angeles. There's 1,000 women who would screw Harvey Weinstein tomorrow to get a part still. Okay? And you can't just say that that doesn't matter. It absolutely matters because it sets an environment where this happens. And I, you know, a lot of the women are like, that's crazy. That's mansplaining. I don't know what you're talking about. But hey, a lot of times, a lot of the women's problems come from other women. I hear women all the time criticizing Sarah Huckabee Sanders, which you don't agree with her and the way she does her job and her politics. All I hear is people picking on her looks, and that's women, and that's girl-on-girl crime. And I think until that stops, the men sort of look at that tacitly as approval to act the same way.
I agree. I think women need to get on the same page because we use sexuality when it's convenient in certain contexts. Mm-hmm. So it's either for power or it's either for to play the victim. And we need to figure out what sexuality is, because I think, you know, I agree. I think we still live in a society where we put men with high statuses on a pedestal, and women are willing to do whatever for these men. And the reason why these behaviors are happening is because someone told them it was okay. And it wasn't another man. It was women who told them it was okay. So we got to start with behavior of how we want to treat sexuality and how we want to use it. And it, you know, this whole like sexual liberation, it's okay for me to sleep my way to the top. Well, let's be consistent about that. Like, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is nothing less empowering than hearing we're all victims all the time. Like, I don't understand that. And I don't know how that that does good for anybody. And it certainly doesn't do good for dating culture. But, you know, you have to look at it now. Like, if you're a guy, it might not be worth it anymore. And it's already not worth it for a lot of guys anyway.
I totally get that. Like, I mean, the consequences are just too far. But it's tough because, like, women are more, like, independent. We obviously see this in San Francisco, as you pointed out, too. And, like, there's something amazing about that. We don't want to discredit that. But a lot of us, even if we are more independent, still want that, like, masculine male to step up.
But you know one thing you can do as independent women? Stop saying you're independent women. We get it. We can see. Oh, you don't need us. There's no reason to say it. It only says two things. It says to the men, I don't need you. And it says to other women, I'm better than you.
Yep.
Because I think all women are independent women, you know? So I think that too. So getting rid of that, because the men hear all day long, I don't need you, I don't need you. That if we don't work it out, there's only going to be 20% of guys left who are out there still trying. And those guys are going to be douchebags.
Yes. And that is exactly why I would say this. We have to involve each other. Like, this is my issue with the whole lean in discussion, is that it didn't involve men. We need to involve men in these discussions. And from the male perspective, I would invite men to interject. Come join the conversation. Because sometimes we don't, you just got to get in there, like through your sister, through your mother, through someone you're comfortable with, because we need to hear from you guys too. And I think we as women need to be more welcoming of.
Well, I'm going to an event tonight where it is honoring men for supporting women or something. And the event was almost canceled because so many women were like, we should never honor men.
Wow.
And it's really bad. And so the women are mad at the other women. And I am not, you know, I always say I'm in the hope business. I am not nearly as hopeful. I never thought things would get worse than they were after the election in 2016. That was very man against woman. But things did get better. And by the middle of last year, you could sort of feel it around the country. And then now it is just, it's not good. Yeah.
It's time to take a quick break so we can tell you about the latest service we have been building over at Dateable. We'll be offering a platform to connect you with vetted dating experts from our network to help with everything from dating profile reviews, coaching to see where you're getting stuck in dating, and even ways to get real feedback about your dating style. The sessions typically run from 30 minutes to an hour and can all be done via Skype or Google Hangouts, so you can be anywhere. We're so excited about this because so many of you wrote in asking how you can find people to help up your dating game.
And this should be a great way to get personalized, affordable advice. We'll be adding more coaches and more services. And of course, let us know if there's something specific you like to see. To meet the coaches and book your session today, visit datablepodcast.com/coaching. Now back to the show.
So all that being said, I know earlier you said, like, doesn't matter where you live, you can make the best of your situation. You can create the love life you want. What are your tips for people?
That you cannot operate out of fear, and you have to, and you can also don't have to judge everybody by one bad one. And mostly you got to stop bringing your baggage to the table. You have to not be afraid to communicate somebody face to face. And it doesn't always have to be asking somebody out. It doesn't always have to be sexual. I always tell women, go up to Home Depot and just start asking questions. You know, the more we get comfortable just talking to each other face to face again, like that is the key to all of it. The more we can get comfortable sharing space and time and do things around each other without it necessarily even being dating, that I think that's the first step. And you can do that all over the place. You can go volunteer or do networking events or join meetup groups or anything where men and women, you know, are having conversations in a shared live space. And once we get back to that, I think then we can start pairing up again.
And bringing it back to San Francisco, I don't want to give any more fodder for women in San Francisco to complain about men. So what are some ways that men can improve their dating lives in San Francisco?
Again, the fact that, you know, the woman in San Francisco wears the term bitch as a badge of honor. She's like, you think? She thinks it's a compliment. And so the guy is going to have to deal with that and invite women to do things with them and not be afraid to have conversation with them. And don't take it to a sexual or a conquest place right away. You just got to, you know, find a way to share it for these women to understand that you do have a lot to offer, and that whether it's your conversation or your thoughts or your humor or even your chivalry, a lot of the women still deep down, you're just going to have to peel away one more layer in San Francisco than you do in, say, Detroit. But the juice is worth the squeeze, because you're going to, once you can get in sort of inside of her mind and her heart and all that kind of stuff, like, you do have a better woman there in San Francisco than just about anywhere, you know?
So I think what you said earlier, this like line really resonates with me, like men need to try harder and women need to make it easier. I think that is probably like universal for
that is. And then to take that a step further, it's basically that women look for red flags and men look for green lights. And that's sort of the subtext of all of that. Mm-hmm. It's what's wrong with him. How is this going to go bad? You know, what is that? He's probably, I have my friend on speed dial for when I'm on a date. And the men just aren't like that. The men are fundamentally more optimistic, or they were till 90 days ago, than the women are. And I'm not sure, you know, that is.
I've been guilty of that. I think it's like, it's baggage.
It starts at a young age with the fairy tales and the ideal and Prince Charming and this certain kind of guy. And then when a regular guy doesn't quite feel like that or look like that, there's a level of expectation that even when he's doing pretty good, it doesn't feel like it's getting met. And, you know, there's a lot of insecurity and pain, and we all have that. The one thing that I learned from doing all these shows that I really did not understand, and that's probably reflective of my own self than anything, I had no idea how many men are afraid and how many men are in pain from somebody who may just not even have paid any attention to them when they were 17 years old, literally. And the men don't know how to process it, and they don't know how to deal with it. But that being said, I think there's a larger pool of good men in America than has ever existed in the history of this country. I think there's more men asking questions. There's more men doing the work. There's more men going to therapy. There's more men open to a lot of things to being vulnerable. And a lot of that then, you know, women are like, oh, there's jerks now. Well, what do you think you were dealing with in 1974? Like, those guys were on picnic. So about 20 years ago, you know, the women are like, we wish the men would get more vulnerable and more sensitive. And on one hand, That's you know, not exactly what you want, but the men are trying. And I see that all the time. Like,
I agree with you. I think that's a great thing of what is going on with all this gender stuff.
Yes, but also it needs to stem from education. I feel like men are trying to relearn what it means to be a man. And nobody's really teaching them. So they're just looking on the internet. They're looking for all sorts of resources on YouTube to find out, like, what does this mean to be a man? I have to say, I really think San Francisco attracts men who do have that pain and baggage from earlier in their childhood, from high school, from middle school. They bring that baggage here and they become really recluse and they don't know how to speak to women. And then that feeds into women's frustration. And then that's what creates these really tough independent women in San Francisco. This is the first city I've ever lived in where I will hold a door for a man and he won't say thank you. That frustrates me.
He's embarrassed. But I mean, I'm in the generalization business, so I'll just sort of make this comment. There's a lot of very smart, maybe techie guys in your community, and a lot of them are socially awkward, and a lot of them are dealing with a lot of pain and rejection from 20 years ago. And just the fact that they have a good job and they have money does not always manifest itself in a positive fashion. Mm-hmm. They still lack the social training and mores to sort of even engage one-on-one. And that doesn't really play well.
Well, especially now, women have the same jobs and the same pay. So it doesn't hold as much that it once did.
Not the same pay,
but almost.
We're still fighting for that.
You know what I mean? Like, we're not as like financially dependent anymore. It doesn't offer you as much.
But he still wants to pay for your dinner.
Yep.
So don't offer. You know? and there's ways that the women can sort of set an environment where his confidence can flourish. I brought up the Tuscany example all the time. You guys go over to Italy and you eat up the same behavior that would get a guy arrested here. The women are like, oh my God, these guys were so overtly sexual and we loved it. But the guy does it in, you know, Tucson and he's a pervert.
It's context.
Yeah. Men are very confused by that. They're like, but she liked it there. She liked it from that guy. So the inconsistency leads to confusion, leads to nervousness, and sometimes nervousness makes it seem creepier than it really is.
But then the flip side, like, you've heard this quote, like, I think, Ashley, maybe this quote came from UA, but I'm like,
you've heard this quote from me?
But it was like, anything that you do, if you like someone, anything they do is cute. If you don't like them, anything they do is creepy. So I don't think that, like, I think that's something that's always been there, and it's so subjective to that person. Like,
that's what I think we have to do. Even if you're talking about just like going up to somebody at Starbucks, the women have to understand how hard it is now in 2018 for a man to approach. And so you have to adjust your body language accordingly. And the men have to understand from the women's perspective how often the women get approached by people that don't want to do. So we all have to start sort of looking at it from each other's perspective and talking about it. I mean, that's why, you know, people come out of these great love debate shows and after listening to our podcast and whatever, just having these conversations goes so far in bridging the disconnect.
Absolutely. We need to open up that conversation. I actually want to ask about you, Brian. You are currently dating someone.
Yeah.
You haven't DTR'd. Did you meet this person in LA?
Yeah.
And then what has been your love life?
Well, I don't know. She's very private. That's why I'm like, I don't know. Yes.
What has your love life been like? Have you been married before?
No, I've never been married. So I needed to find somebody who didn't hold that against me, although you should hold that against me, and understood what I needed to go to that scary, vulnerable place that is unnatural for men to go to. You know, so it just took the right combination of A, me doing a lot of the work, B, listening to all of these great love debaters, you know, sort of make their cases and what's wrong, and then C, finding the right girl who didn't judge that, well, he's in his 40s and he'd never been married and what's wrong with him, whatever, and it's just like, I'm okay. Let's figure this out together. Like, that's sort of the key to it. You know, it's the same with the man. The man needs to set an environment where she can feel safe, and goes both ways. And I was ready, and I'd done a lot of the work that I talked about earlier, yep. And so I was capable of sort of finding somebody and make it work.
Great. Good for you. Good for you. Okay. Some takeaways?
Yeah.
Let's go on to some takeaways. I have a lot of takeaways from this conversation. Brian, I have to be honest, before talking to you, I was like, I feel like I'm going to get into some sort of argument with this guy. I don't know why. I feel like he's really opinionated, but I'm pretty much in line with everything you're saying. Some of the takeaways are, I think empathy is a big one. Thinking about the situation from the other person's perspective, that's something that can help bridge this disconnect between these two genders. But also this idea of like inclusiveness. I really think inclusiveness is so important in the discussion. We can't talk about one thing without the other. So we can't talk about the current climate without the other gender involved. So we got to be more inclusive in that.
And I like inclusiveness because it actually kind of goes to another point that's different that Brian made about just like in the Midwest, the genders like hanging out together and doing a lot of stuff. And then in other places, separation. So it's like find ways like obviously to include in the larger issues about gender roles in society, but also like how do you include people in day to day and like get connections that way?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, I know like a lot of people are like, you know, you're going to come at me and we're going to argue and have a different opinion. But I went into this 5 years ago with a, you know, my own personal perspective on things, but mostly a clean slate. And I've heard from over 70,000 real live people face to face. This is not Great Love Debate is not some like anonymous Thrillist 1500 people survey. This is the largest social experiment that's ever been undertaken on this subject matter. So we do have the data and we do have the feedback. So what I'm saying is, this is the consensus of the overwhelming majority of the way men and women feel. People can either deal with it or, you know, be the outlier and be the woman who, you know, I don't care, or the man, I'm fine. But the 85% of people in the middle, these are the answers. And you can deal with it however you like.
Well, I think that's a good point segue to one of my takeaways is like, I love this topic about location because we hear on this show so many people blaming location. And like you said, there are differences in location, but at the end of the day, there's these larger gender roles and then the reaction with technology that is universal. So it's like, how do you find, look to yourself, like how do you find ways to make it work in the city that you're in? Because there's a reason you went to that city. Like, I love hearing that like Milwaukee's like the best city, but like, let's be honest, I'm probably not going to relocate to Milwaukee.
You're not, but then you should look at the number two city, which is Charlotte, which is where I just was. People do relocate to Charlotte every day.
I'm probably not going to do that either, but that's, I think, I guess my point is, how do I make it work here? And like, I love this point of empathy of like, next time a guy comes up to me, instead of having RBF and like not being kind of like welcoming, even if it's not someone that's necessarily who I think is my type, like having that empathy to them that this is one hard these days and more making it like either that it could be something that could lead somewhere, like having that openness, but also even if it's not, just realizing that if I reject them, that's impacting some other woman that they're going to go up to.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people that, you know, never blame the city, but at some point you can blame your own stagnation within a city and seriously moving somewhere. However, there's one change that every single person can make tomorrow that will affect you immediately, and not just the way you perceive yourself, but everybody around you. I would say that the day of the year that the most people in this country are the most confident is Halloween. Okay. Nobody judges anybody on Halloween. Everybody has fun. You can be anything you want to be, and you're sort of liberated, free of judgment to do anything you want. So I always say take that playful costume confidence into every single day of your life, meaning wear a color that you don't normally wear or an accessory you don't normally wear. Suddenly you will send off sort of a body language that is more playful than you normally would. You'll start getting attention from people you wouldn't normally. Then you'll move up to ordering something off a menu that you wouldn't normally order. And then eventually you'll move up to dating somebody that you probably thought is not my type. And everybody should get rid of the words not my type, because if you're 30 and you're still single, you have no type.
And you know, that really is why people in the Bay Area love music festivals. They love Burning Man. It's that exact same feeling from Halloween.
Running naked in the streets. San Francisco is at its most fun, which is awesome, is when it has a sense of community because of some wardrobe thing.
That's definitely what's working even if for you're San Francisco.
At ATT Park and everybody is in giant gear.
Yeah.
They are liberated to scream and yell and show personality and do things because there's a camaraderie of the costume. And so I tell people, ladies, stop wearing black. I know it's slimming, but we don't notice it, you know? The men are looking for shiny lures. So if you have to go out.
It's true. Yep. Even Julie at the last Great Love debate you guys had, Julie was co-hosting with you. And she said, ladies, here's a tip. One, go out when it's raining because, you know, nobody cares what your hair looks like when it's raining out. And then two, wear bright color, like light colors. She wears white all the time in New York because she stands out right away.
She understands that in, you know, the sort of if you're an art history major, you know that the eye is drawn to the lightest thing in the room.
It's true.
And
this
once you're on the date,
get more attention.
Once you're on the date, wear black. But to get the date, you should be dressed like a pumpkin. Or you should be dressed in a, you know, credit to the women in Los Angeles. They will go out with a tiara and a bow to go to the grocery store.
Yes.
And to the man, that seems fun. That seems playful. She's a lot more approachable than if she's just, you know, head to toe in black with her head in her phone.
So you have
to understand that we can make each other a lot more confident if we just make these subtle changes that everybody's capable of making.
And here's another subtle change. This is what I'm learning, is that misery loves company. So we got to avoid that crowd influence. I mean, the great love debate, the one I went to in New York, I was telling you about, it was a bunch of women bitching. And it was like, they came in and said, I'm looking for a good man. And then one next to them was like, girl, I know what you mean. I'm looking for a good man. Where are they? We have to avoid that kind of mentality.
Yeah, we changed. You know what? And it's funny you bring that up. Our New York shows used to be that way because I sort of I wanted to take on the bitchy women. But now our shows are packed, completely sold out every month, and it is really healthy dialogue going on.
Good.
So part of that.
Good.
That
session, I want to say to these women, well, then bring some men from your lives into the discussion. Invite them.
Right.
Why are you here by yourself?
Because they wanted to blame this. They wanted to be validated in their misery. They wanted to hear there's no good men in this city.
Yes.
Well,
that's
definitely what happens. Like, blaming your city is the easy way out.
Also, on the flip side, because I don't want to just say there's all these bitchy women bitching all the time. But on the flip side, I hear this in San Francisco all the time. I met guys who are like, I've given up on dating. I've decided that it's just not for me. I don't need love in my life. And then they go back and play video games with their roommates when they're like 40 years old. And that's also misery loves company. It's a different sort of bitching, right?
Or, to the guys, the juice is worth the squeeze. You know, you're going to have to understand that there's only so much satisfaction you can get from an inanimate object, and you're going to have to roll the dice.
That's the takeaway.
That's the takeaway. And on that note, let's go on to our question of the day. This is a good one. Okay, this question comes from Brad. He says, I have a hard time going in for the first kiss. Every time I feel like I'm getting into her personal space, and in light of today's climate, I just don't know if it's appropriate behavior to just go in for the kiss. Should I ask for permission?
it depends on how you ask. You know, we hear, again, that's another thing. Good question, because some women are like, just throw up us against a wall and kiss me, and some women will arrest us for that. I would say something like, I just can't pay attention to what you're saying because I so want to kiss you right now.
Yeah.
Like, make it playful.
Fun. Yeah.
Make it fun and bring it to her attention that this is what I want to do without it seeming like a question.
I like
declare
that
you want to do it without asking if you want to do it.
Well, there's a very difference of that approach versus like, can I lean in for a kiss? Like, that's meek. Like, what you're saying is like sexy.
Or kiss him and say, you would kiss you if you were me. You know?
That's true. Yeah.
Again, if you try and kiss her and she didn't want to be kissed, you're now a harasser. So who knows?
Well, this brings back to someone posted a screenshot from what you wrote into this group that Julie and I are part of. And this is from October 15th, 2017. You wrote, "Women absolutely want to be kissed on a date without prior consent. Nobody wants to ask consent for a kiss. Trust me." And this elicited 47 comments from men and women. Some totally agreed with you, some totally didn't. Do you, are you aware of this discussion at all? Do you recall?
I say a lot of stuff that gets sent around the internet. Yeah, I stand by that because I've heard from most of the women that they would prefer the spontaneity in a moment from a guy who they want to kiss them. If she does not want him to kiss him, it doesn't matter how he asks her.
Right.
Okay. So basically the caveat on that is from a guy she's interested in, she's just like, shut up and kiss me. And that's true. So maybe people misread the context, but I totally stand by that. Yes.
But some women on this thread did say, well, that's, I need consent. So I need a guy to at least know I'm consenting to him wanting to kiss me. And then the men were saying, well, then how do I know what is consent then?
There's this episode of this TV show Younger where like this guy is like this like huge feminist and they're like in bed. He's like, is that okay? Is that okay? Is that okay? And it's like, she's like, just shut up and like, fuck me basically. And it's like,
right. Well, here's the problem with, you know, I see these dopey apps going around and consent that a lot of times, well, once you grant consent, it's harder to take it back. Or stop it after that. So, you know, sometimes the verbal thing doesn't really work either. But yeah, the overwhelming majority of women, if they like the guy, they want him to kiss her. And if they don't like the guy, they don't. And because there's no way for him to know until he tries to kiss her or even ask, it's sort of the same result either way. If he tries to kiss her and she doesn't want to kiss him, it wasn't going to work out in the first place.
Right.
Doesn't try to kiss her and she wanted to kiss him. That's the problem too.
Huge problem.
I think maybe ease into it a little more. I mean, I'm not a man, so I don't want to speak fully. But as a woman, maybe touch her leg like playfully if she said something funny and see what the reaction is there.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could tell if someone is into that versus not. So it's also like a little bit of a buildup because I think too, if it just comes out of nowhere. So like if you tap her leg and she moves away, maybe not a sign to go in for the kiss.
Again, no, your signs are a level only dogs can hear. Like, you think that we can interpret a gesture? Like, we cannot.
I know.
There's no way. You could be like, body language, yes or no? We really can't tell.
Yeah.
I just learned something on my podcast last week. I never even heard of this, that if you sit at the bar next to me and the right leg is crossed over to the left and like the toe is pointing to me, that means you are interested. And if your legs are crossed the other way, you're not.
Well, like, that's very scientific.
Yeah, I think
exactly.
I would just be,
and I'm like, I would have never picked up on that. Like, you got to be kidding me. Well, if you like me, I mean, I think that's the answer, is to say the way I said it before, but that wasn't asking permission. That was making a statement that I would like to do this.
Yeah.
And that's
a good
different.
Point. I agree. Like the even though that was just my suggestion, I totally get what you're saying, is that every person reacts differently and it is sometimes hard to tell.
And I'm glad that I stirred the pot in your world, because that's my,
I'll know that my subtle body language doesn't do shit.
True. I still think we have to exercise empathy, because back in the day when I was like trying to be an actress and I went on this audition, and one of the scenes was I had to kiss a girl. And I had to lean in for the kiss. And I'm telling you, my palms were sweaty. It was the most nerve-wracking thing in my life, because I didn't know how she was going to take it. I didn't know if I'd be a good kisser.
Oh,
I didn't
God.
Know how I should hold her face. I mean, all of it was like nerve-wracking. So I think we should think about it from the other perspective.
Yeah.
I try to make it easier for the men. If they lean in just a little bit, I will lean in and meet them. That's
well,
consent.
You know, it also helps if you compliment him once in a while. We don't ever hear that from a woman, ever. We rarely hear, you look good.
Oh,
we
that's
tell you,
not true. But
we don't hear it. We rarely hear it. But the other thing, you said you were an actor. You tried to, a good actor learns that if they don't get the part, it just means they weren't right for the part. It's not about them personally. They don't take it as rejection.
Oh,
and I think
sure.
the men, that's a good lesson too. You might've just caught her in a bad moment and she didn't pay attention. These guys were afraid of being rejected. Like, you lost like 5 seconds of your time. Like, who really cares?
Yeah, who really
And
cares?
You're going to have to get over that, guys. You're going to have to not be afraid or think that it's just about you, that she hated you. She might have just had a bad day.
Right. And don't bring that to the next girl. Even if she wasn't into you, right, doesn't mean the next girl won't be.
Yeah.
And if you get rejected, 100 times and then it's 101, well, good. It should be. I mean, so what? Like,
yeah, who cares? You know, you're not going to remember that person in 5 years anyways.
Yeah. Or in 1 year.
Yeah.
Let's wrap this up.
This was great.
Fantastic conversation. Now, if people want to be part of the Great Love Debate, where can they go next? Where in the world can they see you next?
Well, go to greatlovedebate.com. You will see our live tour schedule. We have upcoming shows all over the place. Go there. And you can also find the link on there to our podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. We have celebrities talking about this stuff all the time. And, we're always looking for more ways to continue the conversation beyond, our live shows and our podcast. We think it's something that, dialogue should be happening 24/7 between the men and the women. So we try and do that. And we are coming back to the Bay Area, I think. I think we're coming to Sunnyvale.
Let us know.
And you have like U.S. dates, like all in other cities too, coming up. Okay, awesome.
Yeah, they're all coming up, and they're on. Go to greatlovedebate.com. You see our tour schedule, and it's being updated like daily. So if you don't see your city on there, don't panic. We'll get.
Awesome. And Brian, if people want to reach you, can they find your contact info on that website too?
Yep, there's a big button. It says "Talk to Brian" right there. GreatLoveDebate.com, and you can talk to me.
No need for signals there. It's all
flashing lights, exactly. Like 2000 style.
I consent.
I'm bad. I'm just as introverted as anybody else. Like after these shows, people want to talk to me, and I just want to go to Waffle House. So I need to get better at that too. So.
Well, here's a tip. If you want to meet Brian, just go to a Waffle House.
Stop talking to me over some pancakes at the Waffle House. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for being a guest on our show, Brian. We've been wanting you as a guest for a while. I'm glad this finally worked out. Great discussion. And I agree. Let's just keep the discussion going. It doesn't have to end here. It's the only solution.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Brian. We're going to wrap this up by saying
stay dateable.
Your action item for this week is to reframe the way you view your city. Next time you bitch about how terrible dating is in your city, do two things. One is reframe it. Think about all the great things that are great about your city and dating. And the second thing to do is call up a friend who's single and dating in a different city and ask them what's wrong with their city. I guarantee you it'll make you feel a lot better.
This episode is brought to you by Hired Club, where friends help friends find jobs. You guys, we all know how challenging it is to find a new job, but Hired Club makes it easy. You can post a job or refer a friend for one. You can also get career coaching with professional career counselors to improve your resume, increase your salary, or practice interviewing and more. Join today at HiredClub.com. If you didn't know already, we have a revamped website with articles, videos, and content all about modern dating. You can also find our premium Y series, where we dissect, analyze, and offer solutions to some of the most common dating conundrums. We've had some great feedback about how actionable these episodes are, so check them out on our website or iTunes Music. Also, visit the site today to see the latest about coaching, where we connect you with dateable approved experts to help with everything from dating profile reviews, coaching, and even gathering real feedback about your dating style in a personalized and affordable way. To connect with us, visit datablepodcast.com. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, all under Dateable Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and auto-download the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast player so you never miss an episode.